So as we're going through the case for classical Christian education, we come to chapter 25, which is called the Threat of State Entanglement, which is a very present danger. It's a hazard. It's part of the facing the hazard is part of the cost of doing business, but we really have to understand it. So in my intro paragraph of this chapter, I say, as a matter of policy, the Association of Classical and Christian Schools requires its member schools that desire accreditation with ACCS to refrain from accepting vouchers. Such a stand can be confusing because it's usually the left-wing education establishment that opposes vouchers, and conservative Christian groups frequently support them. So why this particular stand? Well, it boils down to the principle, the one who takes the king's coin becomes the king's man. You cannot have funding of any form come from the government without the government drawing the conclusion that they have authority over that which they are subsidizing. Now, that's actually a decent principle as far as it goes. So if I'm talking to a young 19-year-old college student who's complaining to me about his father's restrictions on his choice of a car to buy, and he's saying, "Do I really have to submit to my father? And I'm out of my own. I'm not living at home anymore." My automatic question is, well, who's paying the bills? Who's putting you through college? Who's paying for the car? Who's writing the check? So when you come down to it, the person writing the check has some legitimate say in what goes on. If you're writing a check, you have the right to say, why don't I get to have any input about what's happening? So if a private Christian school takes a subsidy or a grant or a check from the government of any kind, they cannot be surprised when the government shows up later claiming authority because of the funding that they supply. And we live in a time when the government or the state is willing to exercise a great deal of ingenuity in how they make this argument. So in a famous case, a number of decades ago, there was a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court with regard to Bob Jones University. Now, what we have to do is recognize the principle that's involved here, apart from what the issue itself was. Bob Jones University was a private college that had a prohibition against interracial dating. So they were an old school fundamentalist institution, and they prohibited, they had whites and blacks in the college, but they prohibited interracial dating. They were taken to court by the government, and the argument was that because you are a tax-exempt institution, 501c3, people can give money to you and take a credit on their taxes because you're a tax-exempt organization. They can claim that as a charitable donation. And the fact that donors to your institution can claim a charitable donation and be given a charitable donation credit by the government is an oblique donation to the institution on the part of the state. And so then the state then claimed, the federal government then claimed, that means since you're taking this oblique support from us, you have to conform, your practices have to conform to the public policy of the United States. And since the public policy of the United States does not forbid interracial dating, then you're going to lose your tax-exempt status. So the Bob Jones case went all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, and Bob Jones lost. Now, obviously, there are any number of private Christian schools that don't have the same view of interracial dating that Bob Jones had at that time. But that's not the issue. We do have conservative-believing schools do have the same view of same-sex dating that Bob Jones used to have about interracial dating, and a prohibition of same-sex dating would be as much against the public policy of the United States now as the prohibition of mixed-race dating was against the policy then, and the principle still stands. The government is going to claim that you have to do what they say if you are receiving anything of financial value from them. Now, when we take a stand in ACCS, we take a stand against vouchers, which would be a direct payment to the school. So the government would give a payment. Let's say some student was, you know, could be a scholarship or a need based thing or whatever. But if a voucher or a payment goes directly to the school, how much more are they going to argue that you have to do what we say? And of course, the public policy of the United States currently is diametrically opposed to the reasons that we had when we established these schools. So it's a bad idea for us to accept vouchers. It's a bad idea for us to accept scholarships or payments or anything anything like that. So now someone is going to say, what about, is there a difference between tuition tax credits? Well, there's a difference between the government giving you money and the government allowing you to keep your money. So if you're keeping your own money, you at least have an argument that you can advance in court. So if a school accepts, a state passes a law that says parents who have their kids in private schools can take a tuition tax credit, and it's a transaction between the state and those parents, there is an oblique indirect benefit to the school, but the parents are keeping their own money. They're not getting money from other people, and you're going to have a much more solid ground to stand on. But even there, you're going to have a fight. Even there, at some point, you're going to have to argue for your case in court. It's in my mind, it's best to do whatever you can to keep free of all such entanglements. So using this illustration of vouchers, let me read this paragraph from this chapter. In my view, the acceptance of vouchers would be a significant first step in bringing our Christian schools under the direct control of an unbelieving civil magistrate. One proverb expresses the principle well. He who takes the king's coin becomes the king's man. And that saying comes from the old, if I can interrupt my quotation here. Back in the old days when the British Navy needed sailors, one of the things they would do is they would send teams out through bars and taverns, and they'd give somebody a drink, you know, buy somebody a drink, and they would drink their tankard of beer, and there'd be a coin in the bottom of the tankard. And if the person took the coin, they took the king's coin, and they became the king's man, and so they'd clunk him on the head and haul him off. There was many a sailor who, you know, thought he was going out for a night on the town or a night drinking, and he woke up on a ship sailing the deep blue sea. So you always want to look at benefits, gifts, vouchers, anything like that from the government with a great deal of suspicion. So back to my quotation. If we receive money from the government, we must know that the money comes with conditions. Today, the conditions might be tolerable. You might live in a conservative state where the conditions are not burdensome at all. In fact, they will certainly be tolerable because otherwise the bait would not hide the hook. But if they are not tolerable tomorrow, for example, if the rules change so that schools receiving such vouchers may not discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation, we will discover that getting out of the trap is a lot more difficult than getting into it. And it's easy to say, it's easy for a board, school board to say something like, well, if the government ever put restrictions on that money, we would turn it down at that point. We'd just walk away at that point. Well, it's not that easy because you're going to discover that that with the vouchers or with the support or with the student aid or whatever guise it comes in, your school's going to flourish and it's going to grow significantly. And then when the government threatens to turn off, you know, to step on your oxygen hose, you could say, no, yeah, we're not going to accept that restriction, and so we're not going to take your money anymore. Well, now, suppose you discover that 40% of your student body can't afford to come to your school anymore because that they were dependent on that money. Well, if they're dependent on that money and it's 40% of your student body, then almost certainly the school is dependent on that money. And what that means is you can say, yeah, we'll just say no to the money at that time. I would say no at the front end that is almost certainly going to mean laying off a bunch of your teachers. It's not just a matter of saying no. Now you've got conditions. If you say no to the conditions when they arise, then the chances are pretty good that it's going to be really painful for your institution. So, the fact that such things could happen does not mean that they necessarily would. But in the instances where they have happened, I say, often the school set itself up for the problem and, in effect, invited the problem. Invited the problem. In other words, the disaster need not be universal to be significant. We would be grateful for those instances where a school has escaped losing its academic freedom. Occasionally, a school will not reap what it sows. But as a general pattern, it remains true that God is not mocked. If we sow government involvement, we must not be surprised at the now unwanted government involvement at harvest time. So I would speak as urgently as I could to every member of every private school. If you sow government involvement, at some point you're going to reap government involvement. And the downside is almost always universally more significant than the upside. The downside is going to be more significant than the upside. Now, of course, if your school is on the coast, you know, on the coast or on an island, and then there's a hurricane and a big flood, and the Coast Guard comes and rescues all your students and teachers, that kind of government involvement is fine. That's what the government is for. But the government wants to control the flow of information in areas and in ways where we should be very interested in them not controlling the flow of information. And I want our schools to be as free and as independent as they possibly can be. So I'm something of a purist on this. You can't let me just conclude with this way of putting it. We need to learn how, if we live in a time of overreaching government, which we absolutely do, if the government's too big, too bloated, too involved, too many regulations, too much, too, you know, we have to realize that that government represents us well. That government represents us well. And what we have to do is learn how to say no to the benefits first. We have to stop whining and complaining when the bill comes due. We have to say no to the benefits. We have to say no when the hook is baited. It's too late to say no when the hook is in deep.
I'm a 2009 graduate of New St. Andrews College, and I'm a commercial property manager.
Three kids at Logos, one at home still, and I do flowers on the side out of our house. When you have these little people that you're responsible to shepherd, you realize, I need to know what I'm talking about because they need to have a firm foundation and they need deep roots so that they don't get blown over and that they're ready to stand up for the truth.
I am a programmer. The language aspect of NSA is a fantastic preparation for any sort of programming.
I'm a real estate broker here in town. I think absolutely the perfect education for being in sales of really any kind.
I actually put it to a lot of great use when I was working in the political realm.
I am a pastor in Central Coast, California. Whatever vocation you take, it'll make you take that seriously because you're seeing it through the lens of the sovereignty and lordship of Christ.
For more information, visit us online at nsa.edu.